Natalia. Thank you for downloading the latest episode of the Indian Startup Show. So in this week's episode, I chat to Anu Gowda. She's the co-founder of Workbench Projects. Workbench Projects is the very first makerspace in Bangalore. It's a facility for makers, tinkerers, artists, engineers, and anyone with an inspired spirit to tap into their imaginations and build something that's amazing. So in this conversation, we talked about how she got started in her dad's garage. Anu also talks about her favourite projects. She also talks about being involved in the Hyperloop India project. Exciting details of a Maker Faire event in November, which you can go and attend, and advice on how to get your ideas to prototype stage, and what keeps Anu awake at night, and much, much more. So please enjoy the show. Thank you.
Hello, Anu. Thank you for coming on the Indian Startup Show today.
Thank you, Neil.
Okay, please tell the listeners what you do, please.
So I'm part of a makerspace and a fab lab based out of Bangalore. So it's quite an interesting journey for us. To nestle a space like this, which meant to reclaim a public space in the heart of the city. Mm-hmm. And we're right under the metro station in Bangalore. So it's quite a story for us to tell.
How did you get started then?
So we are two fellow founders. One, my partner happens to come from mechanical engineering background, mm-hmm. Somebody who worked with 3D systems in the US and had spent some time there. And I come from art practice background. I used to work at the Barbican Arts Centre in London very briefly. I came back in 2009. Mm-hmm. And at some point in 2011-12, we kind of stumbled upon one another's work while we were trying to prototype something for an educational services company. So which meant that we were trying to explore teaching mathematics to students in their early years, in a very tangible, more accessible, meaningful way with contextualizing to their everyday realities of the things that they do and they experience in a city that they live in. Mm-hmm. So while we were trying to prototype that, what could have ideally been achieved in 1/4 of its time, we'd taken almost 12 months, a year to prototype it. Mm-hmm. I think that phase was a learning phase for us to understand that in Bangalore, if people did have ideas, they did not have a space that would nurture it, which meant with tools, machines, and mentors. These are the three fundamental things for somebody who can practice making and build stuff, right? And prototype. So I think we decided at that point, after finishing that project, that no more looking otherwise. We would just become enablers for people who have such ideas to come and prototype without any hindrance. Mm-hmm. And that's how Workbench Projects actually started out of a garage, my father's garage, in really some remote part of Bangalore. But I think with time, we were able to make a very compelling case and the city much wanted it. And we chanced upon an association with the government to bid for a public space mm-hmm. in the heart of the city. And we won the bid. And ever since then, we've been right under a working, functional metro station.
How's it going so far? How many members or makers do you have?
On an average, month on month, we do have quite a bit of floating population. Mm-hmm. We have both a maker space as well as co-working space that's fully operational. At any given point, we have around 35 to 40 members, I could say. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes we do, a low season is something like 25 to 30. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that what you expected when you first started in your dad's garage?
Actually, my dad's garage, everything was experimental. Sure. Even the idea was experimental. You weren't very sure whether even people would subscribe to it, right? Because it's still very nascent in India for people to get back to making. Mm-hmm. You know, you've taken some of these things for very easily granted because India is also a very strong service sector country, right? Mm-hmm. So I think we're still midway. The journey is quite long ahead. And so far, so good.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Can you give examples of like courses or workshops that you do or how it works, basically?
So we are quite a demographic neutral space, right? And also very sector agnostic, mm-hmm. Which would mean that we try to encourage makers who come from clearly home-based practice. Mm-hmm. So it could be even my mother who could come in as a homemaker mm-hmm. who always wanted to build a table and a chair, mm-hmm. gets access to tools, machines, and mentors to maybe even build her own dining table. Mm-hmm. I don't know, right? So it could be something as as hands-on as woodworking to, say, somebody who's really exploring robotics, say, electronics, physical computing. So the varied things that one offers. And we try to partner and collaborate with many other facilitators in the city so that we can build this platform a lot more stronger. And so you will see people who are interested in running workshops with vertical gardening to Arduino to, say, jewelry making. So it's a range of things.
Excellent. Do you have any, like, favorite projects, or can you share some success stories that have come out of your makerspace?
Yeah, I think two very interesting stories really strike of our space. One initially happened to be from somebody who is a practicing architect and also teaches in one of the very well-known architectural college based out of Bangalore. He hails from the coastal belt of Pondicherry. So this is a very prominent tourist space as well. And he was very sensitive in actually looking at building low-cost housing, you know, affordable houses, and was also trying to see whether he could really use tidal wave energy so that he could harvest for domestic use, such that it's built into the house. So that at least 15% of the domestic use of that energy could be harvested from the tidal waves in the coastal belt itself. So it is, it's called Blue Wave Green Energy Tech, which this member of us eventually patented and went into the market and is doing great. So I think that's one story that really keeps coming back to me. And the other story, which is quite interesting, is a product that was conceived by somebody who is from the veterinary sciences background and who was able to identify a problem in his own practice, saying that the traditional stethoscopes really do not do justice to reading the vital signs, particularly of the animals he treated. And he was very keen to, you know, bring a team together and put together the first electronic stethoscope. And of course, it went on to the crowdfunding platform, and it's called Thal. And Muse Incorporated was started out of Workbench Projects. And of course, they've moved on and stuff. But these two stories, and of course, there are many more if one had to speak about, which I do think we've been enablers for such things to at least get started. Yes,
things are going well then. What would you say, like, the biggest challenges then? You know, what keeps you awake at night then?
Oh, I think a space like this is not very easy to generate revenue, because I think we've also put our own strengths as our own limitations, you know, because both the founders are very, very driven to responsible innovation. And the primer is that we want to keep enabling work that will be meaningful for the larger benefit of the society. And of course, you know, you do trade off when you take up consulting, you rent out your space and stuff. But it's not very easy to sustain a practice and sustain the operational costs of a physical space that demands a lot of upkeep and maintenance. So when you are running a startup without any funding from anyone, such that you want to bootstrap it because you're very ideologically stuck on the fact that you do not want to sell your soul to the devil, you know, and you want to also see that the purpose with which you've started should not be lost. Right. And I think for us to sustain that rigor has been the biggest challenge. But I think we're figuring things out now.
Sounds exciting. I believe you're getting involved with the Hyperloop, if you can just explain that, explain more to our listeners.
Right. Hyperloop, particularly Hyperloop India project, which was a collective of student body of multidisciplinary students from various colleges, very reputed colleges from across India, had actually done their homework well and were already part of the first grand challenge of the Hyperloop Global Challenge. Mm-hmm. And I think there were around 1,200 teams that had applied. And these boys had already made it through the first round. Mm-hmm. And they happened to be one of the 24 finalists who were invited by SpaceX, the guys who laid out this 1 mile track to test the technology, where our Indian boys were able to, take that forward, given that they were keen to use our facility to physically prototype this scaled-down version of the pod. So it was not just us, it was many people in the ecosystem based out of Bangalore, particularly the industrial belt with our connects that the boys happened to build this 4 meters by 1.5 meters by 1 meter pod, which is like almost the scale of a sedan.
Sounds exciting.
Which was built and shipped to LA to test. And yeah, it's just on its way back to India now by sea. Well, yes.
Did you get any feedback on how it went?
Oh, yes. I mean, we were, sadly enough, we were not the top three who made it through the challenge to go into the vacuum chamber. Mm-hmm. But we were certainly recognized for the compact electronics and the feasibility and the scalability in design. And I think the boys have done a good job and they're furthering their research in that direction. Mm-hmm. Yeah. To say, I think they're also working on several projects, these boys, who are still college students, right? Yeah. And so we were just enablers to help them get that pod ready and move there to run it at the SpaceX facility.
Hyperloop then, is it hype then or is it going to be real then, do you think? What your opinion is?
See, for me, there are two views to this, right? Hype in one sense, I do agree, because coming from a very developmental sector, the mindset is that, there are many other things that as India that we should be addressing and getting from point A to point B, if it's going to be really helping change the dynamics of, say, the operations of lesser-known occupancies in smaller towns to the cities, I do believe that this is going to be a phenomenal change, right? And the hype part of it is like, yeah, I mean, you really need to see the proven technology, right? Because all of us are experimenting with it. Somebody wrote the white paper sitting in the West, but cracking that technology isn't that very easy. So I think it will take us time, but for me, the very reason we supported a project which is so futuristic in time and talking about the fifth mode of transport was to enable and also to ensure that students, regardless of whether they are still within the academic confines with their limitations, mm-hmm. who dream to make things happen, should be provided that platform. Mm-hmm. And the second thing that I always believe is that we should not fear to fail, you know. And this project is a testimony to that we were trying to help enable students to gain that confidence that needless to be supported by the academic world or the, non-academic spaces. Mm-hmm. If there is a purpose and there is an interest, everyone has to be provided that fair chance. Mm-hmm. So I think for us, the Hyperloop is still a futuristic technology. But I'm glad we were tempted, and I do see that there could be real possibilities because Hyperloop 1 has already started some initial discussions with the state government of Karnataka to do its pilot. So it certainly is seeing some light of its day, I could say. Mm-hmm. It's certainly seeing some direction.
Yeah, watch this space.
Yeah, we just have to be keenly watching it.
I believe you're doing a maker fair next month, if you can tell our listeners about that.
Yes. So this is our commitment that annually once we try to encourage the community as much as possible to come, share their work, showcase their work and celebrate the movement. And we started out with the Maker Media's license because that's a time-tested event world over. And this is our third innings, I could say. Mm-hmm. And of course, this is the bigger and the better, the mega fair that we are hosting with the support of the Karnataka ITBT Ministry. So we are seeing a lot of work happening at ground level because we've done some extensive traveling to look for makers across the state and some across the country as well. So we're quite excited, actually, about the upcoming fair.
How many people turned up last year then?
Last year, it was a one-day event on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. We had nearly around 4,500 footfall. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Through the day of around 8 hours. So that was quite, and of course in India, number isn't an issue, right? But it's also about the quality of the fair. I think hosting it as an independent fair with, as a startup, I think we did a great job last year. Mm-hmm. Putting it together with our own challenges. You do know how the limitations are, but still, I think we did justice to the fair. But this year, yes, there is a lot of support in terms of the government showing its commitment and promise. Mm-hmm. So certainly there is an appreciation for, amateur makers. Mm-hmm. So I think this is going somewhere in the positive direction.
Excellent. Well, let's talk about you then. Mm-hmm. You said you've got an arts education background.
Yes, yes.
You know, a lot of people I speak to have engineering backgrounds, IT backgrounds, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Why art?
So my formal academic training has been in history of arts and then gallery studies and critical curating. Mm-hmm. What I really enjoyed in my entire academic training was to see the convergences of the arts with mainstream practice. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, every work that I do is through the lens and through the entry points of the arts. So when I said earlier that we were trying to build something that was extremely physical and tangible to experience mathematics, mm-hmm. it was about the cross-disciplinary function of how do you bring the arts to speak with science to speak with the math, you know? And I think the process in which one arrives at building these two things, you know, bringing the many disciplines together is the exciting bit for me. Mm-hmm. So with the current facility, what I try to do is I engage largely with educators and students because art is a great enabler to experience digital fabrication, mm-hmm. or be it the sciences. And it has a very strong place that, mitigates a lot of ambiguity in individuals. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, I'll tell you the last project that I worked on. I worked with a group of community children in Halsur, mm-hmm. The place where we work out of. Mm-hmm. And what I was trying to achieve was these are natives of that particular vicinity who come from a very strong Tamil background, mm-hmm. which is a very regional identity. So we were trying to retrace the history of that locality. Mm-hmm. By putting together a digitally fabricated leather puppet show. Oh,
okay.
So which meant that, A, I was trying to give them an experience of retracing history. B, I was trying to give them an understanding of what is traditional leather puppet making, mm-hmm. right? And C, the attempt to see how technology can interface with traditional practices, to see how machines can do the same job very differently and much more precise and allows the student to play with technology in a very different sense. So it was never to introduce the children to technology in a very force-fitting way, but to put that in a very seamless fashion of, you know, the arts coming with technology and experiencing the two and taking on, the real spirit of making. Mm-hmm. So it's left to the child eventually, you know, how he's going to use the technology going forward. How would he really take on to 3D modeling, be it on Google SketchUp, mm-hmm. or, say, using other softwares. But and also understanding the science behind how a laser mm-hmm. machine would work, right? Mm-hmm. So these are the kind of interfaces that I'm more excited and interested in. I mean, I would really like to constantly work on.
Mm-hmm. What are your favorite pieces of art then?
I must say I'm a very figurative composition lover. Mm-hmm. So I love something that's very Indian in nature, okay, and figurative and narrative. So I do appreciate a good Mysore traditional piece of painting. Mm-hmm. To somebody who in the contemporary practice like Ramesh Gorjala, who's appropriated the Ramayana in the best of its way that I can imagine. So I think I'm a more Indian contemporary figurative person with a very strong backing of mythology and text and narratives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excellent. Let's talk about the team then. Mm-hmm. I'm looking on the website, you have a colonel who works for you?
Yes, we have Colonel Vinod Prashar, yes. Yes. So I keep telling, when I told you about running a space for a very demographic neutral audience, mm-hmm, I also mean by practice keeping the space very active with people with very youthful thinking. So if you really come and see our space, two very senior members of our staff, one happens to be Balu, a man who is a lover for wood and machines that really do magics with wood. Mm-hmm. You know, he works on wood and trains people with wood. Mm-hmm. So the entire woodworking studio is run by the senior gentleman, right? That's Balu. Mm-hmm. Now, bringing the capabilities of a retired army officer is to put in a bit of discipline and a sense of administration for a space that is literally quite chaotic otherwise, you know. And I think this is what I say magic, you know. Mm. How do you bring people from different backgrounds but yet to speak to one another in a manner that one can appreciate one another's skills and find their way in a place that is so maddening?
It's quite, yes. It's quite impressive. He's like a paratrooper stroke international hockey player.
Oh, yes. Yes, it is true, but and I think that will continue to be the spirit of the space.
Okay. Well, last few questions then. What advice would you give someone who has an idea and mm-hmm. wants to bring that idea to a prototype?
I think this is in another interview that I gave, and I keep repeating that often, that, you know, if you really have an idea, stay invested in it enough to jump and deep dive into it, mm-hmm. you know. I always say that that's why the word incubate, it's as good as giving birth to that child, right? So for that, you really need to preparedly ask yourself, how invested are you in that idea? Because often I see that people lose a lot of patience given the trajectory is not very positive sometimes, you know, because with any idea that you come up, you have 99% of them saying that it's a wasteful idea. So, I mean, how do you really beat those odds with your own real homework, right? Mm-hmm. So you need to be convinced with your idea from the get-go, mm-hmm. which means that you need to have incubated that idea in yourself to do enough research to begin with, mm-hmm. even before you deep dive. So I think that's one thing that I always tell anybody who comes up with an idea. Because it's very easy to float off ideas, and there are zillions of people who are like idea hoppers, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but that really doesn't take them anywhere. Sadly enough, they don't complete it, and they let the others start from an unfinished job, you know. And what could have been done right at the very get-go, I think people will try to demystify it in the wrong sense, you know. So why do you leave room for that? Either you do it right and be invested, or just don't do it at all, because there might be someone else who's worthy of that idea and to put that idea to meritorious work.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any heroes that you look up to, or any influences?
Influences in the ecosystem, or it's just general?
In general, yeah.
Who do I really look up to? I mean, should it always be somebody who's very famous?
So someone who's probably been an influential person in your career or life.
For me, that's I think for every girl, it's always the dad. Okay. You know, the father is the image, mm-hmm. you know, because he's a true believer in what you do, and he's always willing to tell you that, you know, sweetheart, first you try and attempt, you know, mm-hmm. failing is the second part, and mm-hmm. It's always there to stand for you, you know. So I think for me, it has been my father, who's always been around and who supported my madness through and through. Because it's not very easy for somebody from the arts background to conceive and run a space such as Workbench Projects, which is a very technically backed organization, right? So to stay invested in it, it's also about the faith that one has to go every day through the rigmarole to say that, hey, I understand little, but I'll understand better today, you know, and even better tomorrow. So I think that drive has come from him, I think. Awesome. Yeah.
Last question. If people want more information on the Maker Faire and the Workbench Projects, what must they do?
Very simple. I think we're all very well networked today. I mean, the first thing that we could all look up is go on and look for Maker Faire Bengaluru. And we're quite prominently visible. And it's bengaluru.makerfaire.com is the first thing that should be on their systems. Second thing, Workbench Projects. I mean, I think the online footprint is quite decent. And our contacts are also listed right out there. Even dropping an email is good enough, and we can start anywhere from there.
Excellent. Thank you, Annie, for coming on the show today.
Oh, it's lovely talking to you.
Thanks to Anu for coming on the show today. That's the end of the show. If you liked it, please leave a rating and review of the show. Just search for The Indian Startup Show on iTunes. We're also on Stitcher and Overcast, Podcasts, Downcast, Instacast, Pocket and Amble TV. If you're building something so exciting, please email me hello@neilpatel.co, or you can tweet @Indian Startup Show, or go to facebook.com/Indian Startup Show. We'd love to connect. Thank you and goodbye.